So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So there is one really, let me see if I can bring it up, one really nice prayer that we chant when we sing the Mangalacharana prayers, or the prayers invoking auspiciousness, glorifying the different spiritual masters in our line and glorifying Krishna. There's one prayer that we chant glorifying Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is Prabhupada. He's the founder of the Hare Krishna movement. He's right there. And his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his spiritual master's father is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he's like my spiritual grandfather, and for most of you, your spiritual great-grandfather. So there's a beautiful prayer glorifying Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Namo Bhaktivinodaya Sachit Ananda Namine Gora Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. So Namo Bhaktivinodaya Sachit Ananda Namine. So Namo, offering my respectful obeisances to the Bhaktivinodaya, the great Vaishnava, Sachitananda Bhaktivinoda. Gaura Shakti Swarupaya, he's the embodiment or the form of the spiritual energy of Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself. So he's being glorified in this way. In other words, fully empowered by the Lord. Gaura Shakti Swarupaya, Rupanuga Varayate, and he's considered the best of the followers of Rupa Goswami. So, Gaura Shakti, Swarupaya, the embodiment of the Shakti, or the transcendental energy of the Lord himself. It's explained that, what's the verse? Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana, that one cannot be empowered to spread spiritual life or Krishna consciousness any other way than that empowerment coming from the Lord. Unless one is getting that empowerment, one can spread so many things, and so many things are being spread in this world. But if one wants to spread genuine spiritual life, one has to be directly empowered by that spiritual energy of the Lord. And Srila Bhaktivinoda's life is proof of that empowerment. Just like we were saying, he wrote his first poem when he was 2 years old, and then when he was 6 years old, he had mastered the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. These are great epic scriptures that we have in our line, when he was 6 years old. Then when he was 9, he was becoming expert in astrology. But then he decided that astrology by itself will not lead one to spiritual perfection. So then he began absorbing himself spiritually when he was 9 years old. And he wrote a biography of himself, telling so many stories. And there was one story that sticks out in my mind, and that's where he was a young man. He was became a magistrate by that time, relatively young. And there was a problem it was getting more and more difficult, more and more heated between the Christians and some group of impersonalists who don't accept the impersonalists or the Mayavadi. They don't accept the personal nature of God. And they're very popular in India. Actually, everywhere in the world. They're not really called impersonalists or voidists, but so many different philosophies expounding the impersonal nature of God. So he was asked to settle the dispute. And so he said, well, actually, neither of them are correct. But of the two, who did he favor? He favored the Christians because they accepted the personal nature of God. So there's so many beautiful stories like that. When he was a young man, his proclivity for spiritual life and his activities amongst his classmates and among the people in general, and as he was getting older also, there's so many wonderful stories of his life. And so all the poetry he wrote vast number of books explaining our philosophy, explaining the books of the six Goswamis so that we could understand more deeply what the six Goswamis were saying. He preached vigorously. At that particular time, Vaishnavism, or Krishna consciousness, as it is, had been passed down from century to century, it had been, relatively speaking, practically speaking, lost. Just like when Lord Chaitanya, who is the incarnation of Krishna, appeared 500 years ago, and he spread Krishna consciousness everywhere, all over the continent of India. So when he left, that was being carried on by the stalwarts. It was Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda, so many great souls. But in due course of time, it became obscured again. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya were lost because of the influence of Kali. We see that they're prevalent now, and it's the influence is growing, but it's not that necessarily it will automatically happen. Even after Lord Chaitanya left, super, relatively speaking, soon, lost. Then revived again. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladeva Vibhushana, and then lost again. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came onto the scene, it was lost. In the name of Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, there were so many deviant sects. The Sahajiyas, the Bauls, the Smarta Brahmins. In the name of Krishna consciousness, they were spreading some twisted philosophy. So the real thing wasn't there. In fact, he was searching, I'm not sure for how long, but month after month after month after month, for a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but there was none to be found. The life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Finally, he found one copy. So practically speaking, he had to begin this ancient tradition from the start again. He had to revive it. He had to renew it. So it's really inconceivable how one person could do such a thing, unless we understand that he was empowered by Krishna. And when one is empowered by Krishna, it's as if Krishna is acting. In fact, he is, through that devotee, Shaktivesh, empowered representative. So in this way, we can understand how he is the best representative. He also explained Rupa Goswami's teaching, so we could understand Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate. That word Varaya, it's interesting. That means the best. So in that way we can understand he's the best representative of Rupa Goswami. Just like Vara, that means the best. One of Krishna's names, Nata. Nata what? Nata Vara. So what does that mean? Best dancer. So you'll find many words with Vara. That means the best. So Rupanuga Varayate, the best follower of Rupa Goswami, because he revived the teachings and spread them, as we can see, by the seed that he planted and by the work that he did. Now Krishna consciousness is all over the world. And there's another way to understand that he's the best representative of Rupa Goswami. That's a more internal, esoteric understanding. He explains in his autobiography that he is Kamala Manjari. Every one of us has a spiritual identity, that as we become purified, gradually becomes revealed who we actually are eternally in the spiritual realm, who we actually are with Krishna, what identity we have, what role we have to play in a loving relationship with God. It's very, very special. So a pure devotee knows who he is. That's revealed to him. What to speak of someone who's descended? And he explains that he is Kamala Manjari. He explains himself as an unworthy servant of Lalita. So we know in our spiritual theology that Krishna is there in the spiritual world, and he has many intimate associates, of whom are the gopis. And the best amongst the gopis is Radharani. And the best amongst Radharani's intimate servants are Lalita and Vishakha. They're serving Radharani. And Rupa Manjari is serving Lalita. And Kamala Manjari, who is Srila Bhaktivinoda, is serving Rupa Manjari. Das, 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 anandas. The servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. So in this way, we can also understand that, as we were saying, best, most intimate servants of Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha. Best, most intimate of Lalita, Rupa Manjari. The best servant of Rupa Manjari, Kamala Manjari. So, once again, Rupanuga Varayate, best servant of Rupa Manjari. So in a more esoteric way, we can understand this, what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's position actually is. I read his biography several years ago. Actually, I read two of his biographies. So enlivening. One thing that really struck me was that Srila Bhaktivinoda was not healthy. As his life went on, sickness after sickness, this one and that one, and not just that he had a cold or he had a little problem with his back, something like that. But he had some big, big problems. And I was so impressed reading the biography, seeing that in spite of all these problems, in the midst of all these very heavy physical problems that would render most people just helpless, completely incapacitated, he was producing all this literature, writing all this poetry, taking care of his family. How many children? 11 children? 11 children. Raised them so nicely. He had all these responsibilities with the government, the chief magistrate. He was relied on so heavily. And especially, he never gave up his writing and his preaching work. It's quite something if we think about our own lives, how incapacitated we become when we're just a little bit sick, right? Or I have a cold. Or a little this and a little that. It's not so easy to maintain one's spiritual practices. It's easy to get distracted by our bodily difficulties. For someone who's not on the bodily platform, who's on the spiritual platform, they're not experiencing on the same level that we are. They're able to transcend these things by dint of their absorption in their spiritual life. Who can think of another good example? Srila Prabhupada, right? Prabhupada never stopped. Traveled constantly. Sometimes he crossed 5, 6, 7, 8 time zones And as soon as he would arrive, he'd adapt to the time zone of the country, and he'd continue his schedule, which was very phenomenal. It's similar to the schedule, practically the same schedule as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Going to sleep 10:30, waking up a few hours later, doing all the writing and translating. Prabhupada never skipped a beat. And when he got tired, or when he got sick, even the last days, if you read his biography, and if you see the video, the doctor said an ordinary person would be screaming in pain. What was Prabhupada doing? He kept on translating. You see, if you see, saw the video of Prabhupada's life, he couldn't talk. He could only whisper very faintly. And the devotees had to bend down very close to Prabhupada with the dictaphone. The last parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada dictated like that. So that's a very advanced platform, something that we can take inspiration from and try. Not that we sacrifice our health to the point that we can't function. It's actually a fine line. But there's always something that we can do for Krishna, even when we're very sick. I have some experience in a limited way when I lost my voice a few years ago for a year. I couldn't speak. So I started to write. That's when I started writing my blog. So I was able to make an adjustment. Then last year when my arms didn't work, I couldn't play, I started to dance. So that was nice because I was always playing something. I never really danced. So I started to dance. So we can make adjustments like that. I'm sure you have experience of making adjustments like that. But when we're very sick, when there's so much pain that it's really hard to control the mind and fix it other than on the pain, of course, one can take drugs like morphine, etc., and then no more pain, right? When I had my operations recently in Argentina on my arms, after the operation, they had to give me those drugs because it was so painful. It's just common procedure that they, and no pain. And there was a devotee who was staying with me in the hospital all night, and I wouldn't stop talking about everything. I'm just going on and 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 on. He couldn't sleep. I was just talking and talking. That's the result of the influence of those drugs. But what do they not do? They don't enable you to become more and more absorbed in chanting and your spiritual life. So without those drugs, you don't get absorbed in spiritual life, and you're writhing in pain, and all you can do is think about your body. So either way, we can't win. Just like Jayananda, it was so painful when he had cancer. Most of you know about Jayananda, what an exalted soul he was. His picture is on the festival cart when we do the parade, the Rath Yatra cart. His picture is there. And he chose not to take the drugs for cancer, because he said they altered his consciousness. He couldn't meditate on God. He couldn't meditate on Krishna. And he saw that as the most important thing. So Prabhupada wasn't taking drugs, and his pain was so extensive we can't imagine it. An ordinary person would not be able to maintain their equilibrium, their poise, their meditation on Krishna. Prabhupada was able to do that. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as well. Dhiras tatra namuyati, even at the time of death, it's explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, the self-realized soul is not disturbed. So we take wonderful example from that. Especially as one gets older, one realizes how difficult it is to tolerate the problems of the body in the sense of being able to continue one's bhajan or one's sadhana, one's activities of spiritual life, one's internal meditation. And so in that connection, I wanted to read a letter that I found from Srila Prabhupada that's worthy of our meditation and perhaps some discussion. There's, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, this is, I think, in the early 70s. He's writing to Madhusudana. Apparently, Madhusudana asked him if he was taking care of his health, he was being careful. And Prabhupada said, "My dear boy, lecturing for Krishna has nothing to do with this body. If I would not have lectured, how you would have come? So as far as possible, I'm taking care of my health. But Krishna's service must be executed, even at the risk of life. A living entity gets millions of opportunities to get a type of body, but hardly he gets opportunity to serve Krishna. The service of Krishna must be executed at all risks. But do not worry, I am taking care of my health by the help of Gaurasundara. I hope you are well." So what is Prabhupada saying there? He's saying a couple of things. He's saying that spreading Krishna consciousness is so important that even at the risk of our lives, we should do it. Sometimes, throughout history, we've seen devotees of God have risked their lives, as Prabhupada did. He had two heart attacks on the boat coming over, even. And he was had other heart attacks. He was sick, but he didn't stop. He kept going. Not that we shouldn't, as Prabhupada said, he's trying to take care of himself, but not at the expense of preaching Krishna consciousness, of serving a spiritual master in that particular way. So it's a question of figuring out how we can do it, how we can try to maintain our health and also engage in preaching Krishna consciousness. And all depending on our faith, all depending on our particular mood. And one will take more risk at certain times than others. But still, that dedication is there because of Prabhupada's love for everyone and also Prabhupada's own desire to serve the instructions of his spiritual master. So very often we have the choice whether to sacrifice a little bit of bodily comfort, whether it's making an easy situation for ourselves if we're a little sick, or if, going to a place where it's maybe a little too cold or a little too hot, or there's too much poverty, etc. Sometimes we're faced, or that we don't like the people, or it makes us too uncomfortable dealing with certain elements. We always find ourselves in situations like this where it's just a little too difficult for our mind and body. So if we think like great devotees like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and some of the devotees who we know in our movement, who sacrificed so much and became glorious themselves and became so happy themselves, even in spite of their bodily situation. If we think about these types of devotees, we get great inspiration. So that's one of the main things that I like to meditate on regarding Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's not really, when we chant the glories of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's not really mentioned that much. At the same time, if you look at the background a little bit, what he actually went through physically to do what he did, our appreciation in him will grow so much more. So I wanted to mention that to you today. So then when his appearance day comes on Tuesday, you'll be a little bit prepped for glorifying him and praying to him for mercy, for empowerment to be able to follow in his footsteps. So thank you very much. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. So I hope I didn't keep you too long.